I'll make one little announcement of news, and that is that the Cork Literary Review is being launched on Thursday at the City Library at 6:30. And you're all welcome. I hate to do this because I find it very impolite, but I'm going to have to read more on. This is a villanelle, and it was inspired by both the absolutely horrible Ryan report and a lady I know in Clan Kilkee who said a phrase to me that her mother used to say to her, and I thought, ah, there's a poem there. So the poem is called The Strap Hangs Ready by the Door. Searching for the telltale signs that innocence could never know, suspicion haunts the guilty mind. Spying through Venetian blinds, for hands in pockets, hands below, searching for the telltale signs. Idle hands the devil finds, who can tell where they might go? Suspicion haunts the guilty mind. Under covers of bed, book, and rhyme, rooting out sins before they grow, searching for the telltale signs. Spitting the fruit and eating the rind, bitter thoughts in every swallow, suspicion haunts the guilty mind. Justice and love are doubly blind, unsoiled and pure as fresh white snow, but searching for those telltale signs, suspicion haunts the guilty mind.
Thank you, Tina. Next up, we would please have Colin Scully.
This is a poem I wrote years ago. At the time, I was writing a lot of poems about physics and time. So this is one of these. So I suppose just basically what the poem is about is that at the time I was thinking about, you have the theory of the Big Bang, and you have the universe ever expanding, and eventually the stars are burning out, and everything is leading towards a state of no change. And I suppose that's basically the theory of what's happening. That we're headed towards something, we're low entropy, low energy, and things are reaching that point. But I suppose then here on Earth we have a very different scenario happening. We have all different species, and you have nature, and you have so many different species, and the evolution of all these species. So constant change. So it seems like there's a huge contradiction. So what this poem is basically looking at that contradiction, I call it Unchange. Towards unchange may things progress, as planets do, as atoms do. All things must move towards arrest, to limit action, limit haste. So life was born, and nature seemed, to set new rules, to vote for change. And for life forms to prosper beings, each progeny must rearrange. Through this rule, all life forms tried, and in so doing formed a state, which inward did evolve at will, but outward did not fluctuate. Each species now can slow to rest, through populace is countless time, and time being changed, it serves to such show, towards unchanged are things designed.
This is called La Forza del Destino, which was an opera, but just to say that La Forza is one of Italy's political parties. The life of politicians seems synonymous with sleaze. Tough justice from Sarkozy has De Villepin on his knees, and blinking in the spotlight is another head of state, as the Constitutional Court is about to seal his fate. Convicted for his dealings with the Mafia on the sly, he kept avoiding prison through the favors he could buy. Facing 17 criminal charges, he behaved like Al Capone. No wonder his detractors called him Machiavelli's clone. I was supposed to enter politics so as not to rot in jail, he told two nonplussed journalists who followed in his trail. He has handsomely rewarded those who helped him in the past, paying down their sudden rise to power, the money they demand. At the slightest whiff of scandal, they are spirited away to a seat within the Senate, where they kept the chart at bay. These were known as Burley's cronies by the opposition press, who revealed conflict of interest and clamored for redress. By now, you must have guessed the name of such a famous phony. The million-euro playboy that is Silvio Berlusconi. Stripped of his immunity, he fairly lost his cool as he lashed out at the president, breaking every rule. A predatory figure and notorious ladies' man, he lifted up with starlets, made his wife an also-ran. Last May, enraged, she spoke out and demanded a divorce, named his Venezuelan mistress to settle some old scores. This boarding, so-called self-made man, backed by the ultra-right, a bon vivant whose parties last long into the night, has passed a law that guilty over 70s go free. How wonderfully convenient. As he now is 73.
Mary, next up we have Chip Gregory.
I read one of my own, but I'd like to read a short one by one of my favourite poets, Philip Larkin. He's a bachelor all his life, and in this poem he compares his own life with that of his married friend Arnold. And it goes, "Oh, no one can deny that Arnold is less selfish than I. He married a woman to stop her getting away. Now she's there all day. And the money he gets for wasting his life on work, she takes as her perk to pay for the kiddies' clobber, and the dryer, and the electric fire. And when he gets home planning to read the evening paper, it's put a screw in this wall. He has no time at all with the kiddies to wheel around the houses. And that room to paint in his old trousers. And that letter from her mother saying, won't you come for the summer? To compare his life to mine makes me feel a swine. But wait, not so fast. Is there such a contrast? He did it for his own gain. So he and I are the same. Only I'm a better hand at knowing what I can stand without them sending the van, or at least I think I can. If no one can deny that Arnold is less selfish than I, he married a woman to stop her getting away. And she's there all day. Philip Larkin." "I'm looking for the shepherd on the mountain with the sheep. I'm looking for the shepherd among the girls who work the street. I'm looking for the shepherd with the policeman on the beat. He's got to be around here somewhere. I'm looking for the shepherd with the drunk out in the rain. Maybe he's at the asylum bringing love to the insane, or with the surgeon and the blade easing some sick patient's pain. Maybe he's hanging around next corner. I'm looking for the shepherd among his Sunday flock. I'm waiting with impatience, but my time is a ticking clock. And when I think I've found the key, I find I've missed the lock, but the door is swinging open anyway. And sometimes when I wipe my eyes, I'm like a man who's blind. And often when I'm angry, I meet someone who's kind. And when I'm searching like a thief, he's standing right behind. But when I turn around, the streets are empty. I'm looking for the shepherd when the night is still and calm. Maybe he's by the junkie with a needle in his arm. Or with the midnight gambler, four aces in his palm. Shuffle up the pack, I need a king. I'm looking for the shepherds, but the journey seems too far. Maybe he's with a crazy boy wrecking a stolen car, or with a street musician strumming that cheap guitar and singing out a tune on a frosty corner. I'm looking for the shepherds with a halo brightly lit. I'm feeling like a jigsaw with a piece that just won't fit. And when I think in my aching heart the time has come to quit, the sun gives me an unexpected rainbow. I'm looking for the shepherd underneath the setting sun. Is he staring down the barrel of every soldier's gun, or joining in the laughter of the clown who's having fun? Maybe he's waiting up in the cathedral. I'm looking for the shepherd who can walk upon the sea. I'm looking for a peaceful man who bring his peace to me. I'm looking for a stranger, he's a guy I know to see on the crucifix that hangs above the altar. I'm looking for the shepherd whose feet and hands are sore, someone who knows of suffering and what agony is for, so I could set sail in his wake to ground on heaven's shore, but the direction of the tide is so confusing. I'm looking for the shepherd who'll never let me down, who'll comfort me in loneliness and always be around, and when I hear him calling, I'll recognize the sound. Maybe he's in the phone box at the station. I'm looking for the shepherd who'll ring when I'm afraid, who understands my weaknesses through all the prayers I've prayed, who'll make me really happy when in my grave I'm laid, because it won't be long before my breathing ceases. I'm looking for the shepherd who took our loved ones far away, to taste the wine of paradise at the end of their long hard day. Will their thirst be quenched forever as all tears are wiped away, and candles flame to guide our footsteps homeward? I awake in the midnight stillness asking, what's it all about? We grow up strong and then decline as the sands of time run out. Will we struggle to that summit cairn, giving one last joyous shout to see far below the golden valley? So shepherd, I can't see you, but I know you're by my side. As sure as ocean strands are cleaned by the rising tide, let me be washed in your glory with nothing left to hide. Shepherd, I am here and I'm waiting. Amen.
Thank you, Cliff. Next up, we've got Brad Barcross.
Hi, everyone. There's a good old mention in Chinese history. He inherited the tradition of Confucianism. I've got this to say, sir. If you know the point of balance, you can settle the details. If you can settle the details, you can stop running around. Once you stop running around, your mind will become calm. Once your mind becomes calm, you can think in front of a tiger. When you can think in front of a tiger, you will surely succeed.
Thanks, Rob. Next up we have Sue Cosgrave.
In a heartbeat. Victorina Victoria, he said, catapulted the periwinkle into the frothing waves. I struggled against wind, my woolen coat sail, my red scarf a banner. Anadora granosa, he whispered, just your common dog cockle. He displayed the cockle shell on the palm of his hand. A trophy, his hand, not the cockle. I held it cut in both of mine. With cold fingers I stroked his skin, his taut tendons. I savored sheer heft of the hand and the man. I walked backwards, laughing, my voice stolen from me even before it reached the barricaded safety of my lips, flying both eastwards on the wind, the sand of a bay extending north-south, the narrowing strand nearly upon us. Just there at Jane Bay Rock, he bent down, the Atlantic waves lifting the sturdy, well-worn boots. I could barely discern his eyes. The angular features of his face were softened, buffeted by wind and waves, once moved by the force of nature, like the cockle shell that now rests nestled within the pocket of my blouse. This one's to warm your heart, he had said. I turned slowly. Behind me, a single step of footsteps zigzagged the distance. The tide retreated westward, exposing fields of shore dotted by rugged backbone. I hold the cockle shell in my hand. I toss it into the sun. I watch them sing together. Crimson orb, the cockle shell. A heartbeat later, the earth will reverse its spin. The sun will rise in the west.
Thank Patricia Ross.
Thank you, Paul. This one is called Stock Taking. Our hearts are not built for bliss, we're all the ridicule of those we love, or the stark quality of what we are not. Simply guardians of homemaking, chasing the long arm of a private law, blocked out by acres of Chardonnay, among other things. Why should I be contrite? Why should I be the one to turn off the light, crawling on the bed to do so? The night is always cold, regardless of how the stars in our hearts go awry. Ignorance is no longer a sin, nor a defense, as we long to see ourselves go for the comfort of our own homes, or the quality of stars in our minds, the structure supported by complacency. Why should I be contrite for this? This one's called The Alabaster Saint. Permanence once was the way to go. Etched in alabaster to a forever smile, to attend the glory of God, or the constant shuffle of mortals that devil into time. Yet I, sallow, indifferent, have seen and now remembered the slaves of time congregate such as we. Sunken eyes, etched crypts, burnt, death, marriages, are your attempt to longevity. My story is smart as seen it all. You could do with the reformation yourself of time stripping off guilt, colour, pigment, spare blushes, grandeur, laugh with indifference at your creator, hammering and choosing your future, but mark my words, you will never outlive me. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Next we have Joe Harding.
That Mary Hoffman, the political tonight, was in past week in Kerry, there was a so-called writer who sent to jail for something like that, anyway, for committing a serious crime against children. And we had a very respectful novelist coming out in his defense, which to me was crime itself. On the 15th of January 2008, there was a tea defile took the case to the Supreme Court, and he walked out, and this poem is called The Victim, January 15th, 2008. And there are two voices, and the first voice is the perpetrator, and the second voice is the victim. No one knows me. After all, I can prowl. Goldilocks will never know until I am stated. Nothing else matters, and the secret is fastened by dolls. Who can I tell? No one would believe me. Why, devils like that do not exist. Anyway, it's my fault. I encouraged them. No, the awful nightmares will not leave me. There is no register, and from town to town I can go and gain someone else's trust. This I must do, I surely must, and inevitably break that trust down. I trust no one now, no one at all. My heart is broken into piercing shards. In the restless hours, the mumbled words that wish to scream out to sidle on and stall. But I go on and on. I must go on. There are no other thrills there for me, little faces, boy or girl, and my loneliness will at least for one short time be gone. Where can I go now in this bleak land? I see the normal people come and go. Our secret will remain until the snow returns. Our Cinderella with sparkling wands. One. The other one's called, Pedophile. May you burn at the stake of tender sticks, wafted slightly by a still furious breeze, very slowly consuming your feet and calves. You're screaming loud before it hits the knees. The tender child screams before those flames. The heart is dying, but the rage is raging. Young hearts are young, but young in name. And the young names are aging, aging, aging. And now the flames creep slowly towards the groin. Correct your trembling thighs like a viper's tongue. Not much for the old dead to be dying, for the dying ones to be the young. Little boy, your magic eyes are glowing upon your baby sister's curls and smiles. You see nothing but her beauty, and annoying something watches. Blood flows from the child. May your teeth grind to mulch when the flames roast your testicles like chestnuts upon a London street. May you be sodomized by the violent sodomites roaming Satan's corridors, foods upon their feet. In your hell, eternity is too short a time, and all the time you have is worth having, where on earth you leave behind your crime of the undead. Say, or let you go on living. Thank you.
Next door. Next we have Matthew Sweeney.
Two pieces written in the last few months. The insect invasion. Then there was the insect invasion. Hordes of them. All colors and sizes. Noisy ones. Silent ones, stingers, biters. They arrived at sunset on Midsummer's Day. After the initial shock, you ran inside if you had sense and got in the shower with your clothes on. Closed doors kept some out, closed windows more, but others made it in anyhow. Fly sprays and citronella candles were useless. As for mosquito coils, rosemary bushes, banana peels, even soap, vinegar and garlic sprays, a room full of lit incense sticks worked some, as did rubbing oneself with eucalyptus oil, but this, apart from the hideous smell, only seemed to attract the giant spiders. Those of us who were parents knew the children would never get over this. Those that would survive. So many didn't, so many adults gave up and died, and the government did nothing. The insects had spared the capital. After 6 days, they suddenly went away at dawn, back to where they'd come from, leaving a trail of husks and corpses that we gathered and burned on pyres. We had a quiet Thanksgiving party, with lookouts posted in infrared glasses. All this happened a year ago this month. Then the stuff that followed came to pass. I read that in National Poetry Day in Donegal, in a library, and there was a load of teenagers there, and it said, sometimes when you write about this, you have to write about that. That poem's about we are all in the ship now, but I can't write a poem starting we are all in the ship now, we are all in the ship now. It's called metaphor. The glass chest set. He woke to find a glass chest set by his head on the bedside table. The vitamins had been removed. The lamp shifted to the floor. The two glasses of water were gone. All this done without a noise. He sat up to see it better. Everything was glass. The board, the pieces, half of these clear, half opaque, as were the alternating squares. He got out of bed to stand above it. One opaque pawn had advanced. The clear team nearest to him had made no move. It was his turn. Who was his invisible opponent? He opened the shutters to let light in, recalling his last game of chess with his father. It had been Christmas. He'd lost, of course, as always. Well, he remembered winning once, then refusing to play for years. He glimpsed the set's reflection in the mirror, saw for a second a shadow stood there. Then it was gone. He sat down, studied the board, and slowly moved a clear pawn.
Thank you, Hugh. I'd like to ask our last five poets to each kind of keep it to one poem. So I'm getting a bit concertinaed here at this time of the evening. Please can we ask up Mary?
The more you talked about the white green turnip, the navy, its small orb crammed with purple, the more I saw her at the kitchen table, hands red raw, wielding the bread knife to perform the daily ceremony, hacking at what she called turnips, big, hairy, yellow bostoons. Food fit for sows and bonnets, you said. And the more you conjured the perfume of the milky moon turnips, peppery and sweet with a hint of violet, the more I saw her washing the oafish orange heads under the cold tap, flaying them into thick slices and boiling them up in hot water, condensation coursing down the kitchen walls and window panes. Warming to your subject, you likened the difference between the fine French navé and the rough Irish variety to that between a thoroughbred and a dray. And I saw her again, gouging the eyes out of fat flowery spuds and stripping giant stalks from bottle green cabbage leaves, the table littered with squealish skins of onions and carrots. And the more you went on about the subtle flavors imparted by the white bulbs to a simple stew, Navajo of spring lamb, say, with slivers of garlic, a bay leaf, and a dash of red wine, the more I smelled the turnip water as she strained over the sink, a plate held over the pan, her hands scalded and red again as she slapped up the stringy flesh with a dollop of butter. Your parting shot was that, in any case, the orange roots were not turnips at all, but sweets. And I saw in a flash that she had not had the words for them, English or French. Those names had never grown here. She had not had the mouth for them, nor the palate for their seasoning herbs. Had never been able to lay her hand on or get her tongue around their small aromatic hearts.
Thank you. Could we have Shamus Harris?
Thanks, Mark. About a piece somebody brought lit one time and had this here. I think it was John Lee actually. It was called Brontosaurus. And nothing could be made with it, so he said, I take my Brontosaurus home. So on the way home I kind of kept ringing in my head. So this is called Brontosaurus, Writer's Block. Took my Brontosaurus home, tried to sculpt a stanza lean from its essayed word, a poem, fashioned into what I mean. Faced my impasse all alone.
picture, aging, pre-dawn scene. In forensic mode, I comb aging picture magazines. Check my scansion's metronome. Prehistoric words to preen. Irksome stanzas my syndrome. Futile efforts shock the dean. Probe my tender limbic zone. Shallow rejects fill the screen. Overturn every stone. This sad diction I to wean. Got my mentor on the phone. Frank verse, blank verse in between. Syntax juggles ever prone. Instant logic's deep ravine. End my prosaic monotone. Lacking poetry's rhyming sheen. Intuitive absent drone. Incognito trampoline. Fill my ever vacant dome. Send the stanza lifted clean. Text me back a rhyme on loan. Plagiarized to set the scene. Found my brown thesaurus home. Plumbing conscious depths unseen. Comprehension gasket blown. Seeping senseless cold caffeine. Scan my churlish heavy tome. Prologue index not a bean. Trochee hunting still I roam. In iambic stew I beam. Thank you.
Can we have James Kay? James Kay?
I'm a shot for you, Casey. I believe in free love, we can never afford it.
Got the national out. Got the national out.
I love my touch, and I love much too much. You love by my touch, and you love much too much. Drink of the prize, you said I told lies. I sit from the pain, you believe me insane. Notice the moment in matching this pond. Notice your disguise, you smile on the sad eyes. Fill up the blue cups with the drop of your mats. Breathe love and silence and clasp forget. Measure there, you are with lucky star. But when I can't man, do I need war. Legends create the sun. So that there, you know that he says, do you want a pint of muffins? I'm now a lad not sure, never more expensive to get it from me. Diddly, I stomp a dozy diddly, I declare. Play the song. What's that? Get that only. Regardless, you know what things I'm just. However, I should have been saying what.
Play the song. I was in, do you know what? The thought of his nightmare was stuck with his current. I wanted you to put it, you know, 12 seconds ticking, but the song comes evening, pausing past the dancing, dinted dust, haunted in the owls in the sanctuaries of part, describing the bombing depth of that. Some blue, black and green is lifting up the shoot print, existence in the present moments, and passage to the mind, the interior range, but full of cunning, future and little sea. Unread is the cry, a dark spot, sack, sun, breath and breeze, a bottom on the cotton as moment shadows to survival. The greater song.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you, James.
Lovely to see you again.
Next up, we have. Thank you, Matt. Next,
we have
Patrick Carter. Woo! So many geraniums now have so many geraniums. We are deafened by the multitude of petals stretching open in the morning, all at once, all together. And the air is suddenly filled with perfume as it were swept ere the tail of the gale. So many geraniums. With the newspaper's jagged edge, I have cut the veins of my fingers ere so soft, touching you. I listen to your voice from music that I need never listen to another song. And your hair is enough to clothe me in the coldest storm. The paths you lead me along twist like a dancer's belly. They are so dark and they never close my eyes. So musical, so dark, so many draining. You fill my mind with so many thoughts, there are not enough windows in the world to frame them in. If you left me, there's not a building high enough that could account for my fall. So many steps that I've tumbled down in my own mind. So many steps, so many thoughts, so many dreams.
Thank you, Pat. And our last person tonight, could we please ask for Alan Chetty?
Yay! He's pretty not to come last.
That'll be
the
last part,
so, you know, I have two short poems. I know you said one, but these were so short, very short. One is in Irish and one is in English, and they're entirely different. The first one's called Tandukha Languages. Which is a friend of mine who's a linguist of Tandukha. Queenie mar Tandukha, Sheena mach, Sonarige, Tandukha the Queen of Thailand, the Pogan Amara, Tandukha father, Leopon Sahabosuban Amara, no one shin holder, not doing a zal, the Neron Dowling. Is Queenie mar Mahanga Fain a kind, is a kind, is a kind, a rabbi the Machorum Stad, is a kind, a rabbi the Mach, Rodegna Roll, is a kind, Ramsplain, a rabbi the Machorum on Toss the Stadder. Is Queenie mar Hanga Fein am a Fuas, Gwret Mwy do Rinke le Gaire, Is ar Shilla le Graun, Is ar na Tanga Chubile ar Halavicto, Is ar Dynastus Bob Queen in Ache in Tanga, Di Avan. And I'm not going to translate that. The next one is called Christmas in Japan, which some of you may well know that the Japanese conclude their R's and their L's all the time. This is a sonnet, so it's quite short. And I was in Japan a few times, and I was also introduced to Professor Chittery, which was a great friend of that. And the first time, after I gave a talk, I was told that Professor Chittery should begin to go crap. if you listen to this carefully, the L's and the R's are interchangeable, not all the time, but again, the end of it is actually true. So Christmas in Japan. I saw it all in Japan, Shinto shrines, with people playing for their ancestors. Taximen with silk gloves on, and a sparkling smile, a crane at 200 miles an hour, no cleats, no vines. The ticket corrector, he wheels a cap and bows. Why have he checked your fail? Everyone is polite. Rinse, they presume that you are long and they are light. And the inscrutable smile says, I know, I know. At Christmas time, they do not believe in Jesus, but celebrate right chapels buying useless stuff, like slippers for their cats, whatever, but never enough. Which is why it did completely confuse us, to see above a shop, a sight to make us pause, nailed to a cross, a happy crucified Santa Claus.